The headlines: Russia says its forces are observing the unilateral 36-hour truce ordered by President Putin, blaming Ukrainians for reported shelling. The UN Security Council stresses the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after an Israeli minister visited the site in occupied Al-Quds. And also, China urges the U.S. to stop escalating tensions after an American warship sailed through the Taiwan Strait. Our top story for this half hour: Russia and Ukraine blame each other for continued attacks on eastern Ukrainian cities amid a unilateral ceasefire announced by Moscow. Ukrainian officials say Russian forces struck the cities of Kramatorsk to the east and Kherson to the south of the country. Moscow, however, says Russian troops have been fully respecting the ceasefire and accused Ukraine's forces of continued shelling. The 36-hour ceasefire, which began on Friday, was called by President Vladimir Putin with the stated goal of stopping the fighting during the Orthodox Christmas. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has rejected the truce, describing it as a ploy by Russia to bolster its defenses. The U.S. president was also dismissive. Russia has accused Washington of showing no drive to find a political solution to the Ukraine war. Moscow has repeatedly said it's open to negotiations to end the conflict, while Ukraine says Russia must withdraw its forces first. Well, the International Monetary Fund has warned that a third of the global economy will go into recession this year. The IMF says that would happen because of three big economies: the U.S., EU, and China are all slowing down. The organization says that hundreds of millions of people would be affected globally.
The head of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva, has issued a dire warning over the economic outlook in 2023, saying that this year is going to be even tougher than the year 2022. That is because the U.S., EU, and Chinese economies have slowed down. The Ukraine conflict, soaring prices, and hiked interest rates, and the rise of the COVID have contributed to the slowdown in the global economy. She also said that a third of the world economy will be hit by a recession in 2023.
For most of the world economy, this is going to be a tough year, tougher than the year we leave behind. Why? Because the three big economies, U.S., EU, China, are all slowing down simultaneously. Half of the European Union will be in recession next year. China is going to slow down this year further. Next year would be a tough year for China. Mm-hmm. And that translates into negative trends globally.
Back in October, the IMF slashed its outlook for global economic growth in 2023. It blamed the gloomy outlook on the ongoing conflict in Ukraine and tougher monetary policies. According to Georgieva, China will face a very difficult start to the year 2023. That's because it is likely to grow at or below global growth for the first time in 40 years, she said.
China has slowed down dramatically in 2022 because of this tight zero COVID policy. For the first time in 40 years, China's growth in 2022 is likely to be at or below global growth. That has never happened before. And looking into next year, for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, the relaxation of COVID restrictions would mean bushfire COVID cases throughout China.
Back in October, the IMF cut its outlook for global economic growth in 2023. It did so due to the Ukraine war as well as higher interest rates as central banks around the world sought to tame rising prices. Inflation has been steadily rising across the globe, causing public discontent in many places, including Europe.
She also said that the U.S. economy may avoid a recession, but warned a strong labor market there may lead the U.S. Federal Reserve to keep interest rates tight so as to combat high inflation, which could have negative economic consequences of its own. The IMF warning comes amid similar predictions by other institutions. UK-based Center for Economics and Business Research has said that the globe will slide into a recession next year as a number of economies will contract due to surging borrowing costs introduced to combat inflation. K Daniel Neufeld said, "We expect central bankers to stick to their guns in 2023, despite the economic costs. The cost of bringing inflation down to more comfortable levels is a poorer growth outlook for a number of years to come." The report is more pessimistic than the most recent forecast by the International Monetary Fund. Meanwhile, oil prices continue to slide, weighed down by China's rising COVID cases and a recession warning from the IMF. The warning comes amid a worsening economic crisis in developed nations. Just recently, Germany's Federal Statistical Office said that the country is grappling with its highest annual inflation in more than 70 years. According to official data, full-year inflation reached 7.9% in 2022 amid surging energy and food prices. The last time annual inflation was near that level was in the year 1951, when it stood at 7.6% as the post-war economic boom began. And the UK faces one of the worst recessions among the world's leading industrialized nations this year.
We're not the government. We haven't been in power for 12 years. Right, every aspect of society that's been impacted by government policy. 10 years of austerity, cuts to the economy, slowing growth, a badly handled Brexit, whatever your view on Brexit was, right, has all led to where we are today. But the fact that we've got so many people out on strike and so many people suffering, only the government can change it, or a change of government can change it.
The fallout from spiraling inflation triggered by the pandemic and the Ukraine conflict will persist for longer in the UK than in other G7 nations, and the country's recovery will be one of the weakest.
The start of the new year has marked the resumption of public sector strikes in the UK. More than 12,000 train drivers across 15 companies have walked off their jobs in an ongoing dispute with the government over pay and conditions in what's been dubbed Tragic Thursday. Said Puduzo reports from London.
St. Pancras Station, one of London's biggest and busiest. But not today. A 48-hour strike by train drivers, preceded by another 48-hour walkout by other rail workers, have meant travel misery for thousands. The dispute between ASLEF and the RMT Rail Workers Union on the one hand, and the employer Network Rail and train operating companies on the other, is largely over pay and the impact of inflation on workers' wages. But disagreements have kept a deal elusive for months.
Well, we want to hear movement on the issue about some of the conditions they've put down in Network Rail. That's a restructuring of all our members' terms and conditions. And it's a similar recipe in the train operating companies. They've gone for a thing called driver-only operation, which we think is extremely unhelpful. We can't accept that. And, of course, we'd like an improvement in the pay offers.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has so far refused to meet with the unions to try and hammer out a deal and has instead vowed to get tough on the strikes. His government is also accused of trying to turn public opinion against the strikers. But there's no sign of that happening yet.
I think workers are well within their rights to demand at least living wages to be kept in line with inflation. So yeah, I'm fully supportive of this.
I really sympathize. I think they're right. So I'm not mad, it's inconvenient.
The UK economy is experiencing the combined effects of Brexit, the war in Ukraine, and its effect on energy costs, as well as inflationary pressure on the post-pandemic recovery. And rail workers are not the only ones complaining.
ASLEF and the RMT are two of the UK's most powerful unions, able to bring their railway service to a standstill during industrial disputes. And the concerns they have been raising about the difference between people's pay packets and the cost of living at the moment are shared by many different industries and professions.
Nurses, ambulance drivers, teachers, postal workers, driving examiners and the like all have pay deals with the government in the pipelines and are likely to be offered less than the rate of inflation. And that means the UK's winter of discontent is likely to drag on. Saeed Purizap, London.
Well, the UK's Prince Harry has for the first time acknowledged killing 25 people when he was a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan. In his autobiography, Prince Harry says he undertook 6 missions as a pilot that led him to, quote, take human lives. He compared the killings to removing chess pieces from a board. The 38-year-old Duke of Sussex justified his actions because of his memory of the 9/11 attacks in U.S. Harry has described his time in the military as his formative years. He's resigned from his royal duties and has since been critical of the royal family. U.S.-led forces invaded Afghanistan in 2001 and occupied the country for more than 2 decades. Tens of thousands of Afghans were killed in the war, and the country remains in turmoil even after the withdrawal of the foreign forces. Israel has announced new measures against Palestinians in response to their appeal at the International Court of Justice. Israeli Prime Minister's office said the regime will impose a moratorium on some Palestinian construction. It also announced financial and political sanctions against the Palestinian Authority. The office said the measures were a response to the PA's decision to wage political and legal war against Israel. Last week, the UN General Assembly approved the Palestinians' request for an advisory opinion from the ICJ on Israel's 55-year occupation of the West Bank. And the UN Security Council has met following a provocative visit by an Israeli minister to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They voiced concern about the status quo of the holy site, but failed to take action against the Israeli regime. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our News Review program. Let's see what our guests had to say about that.
Sign up our News Review segments, where we take a look at one of our stories in a little bit more detail. The UN Security Council has voiced concern over the status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound after a far-right Israeli minister visited the site and occupied Al-Quds earlier this week.
On 3rd January, Israel's new Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, conducted a visit accompanied by heavy security detail to the holy site in Jerusalem. The visit was the first to the site by an Israeli minister since 2017. While the visit was not accompanied or followed by violence, it is seen as particularly inflammatory given Mr. Ben-Gvir's past advocacy for changes to the status quo.
Security Council members reaffirmed the need to maintain the status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They met on Thursday as anger boils among Palestinians over the Israeli minister's visit. They see such visits as provocations aimed at turning the mosque into a Jewish temple. And that's because the decades-old status quo of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound allows only Muslims to worship there. Palestinians want the Security Council to take action.
What red line does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? When are you going to act? It has displayed utter disregard for the sanctity of Palestinian life, the sanctity of international law, and the sanctity of Al-Haram al-Sharif. It does so with absolute contempt.
The Palestinian envoy also said Israel's actions have nothing to do with religious freedom and aim to change the identity of Al-Aqsa. Israel's envoy to the UN was also present at the Security Council meeting. Gilad Erdan defended the minister's visit to Al-Aqsa, saying it was in line with the status quo. The U.S., meanwhile, voiced concern over unilateral acts that increased tensions. The Israeli minister's visit sparked anger from other countries, including Muslim nations as well. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest place in Islam. Joining us for this edition of the News Review is Ghada Karmi, a Palestinian activist and writer from London. Welcome, Ghadi. If I could start with you, what's your thoughts on this? The Palestinian ambassador did ask, what red lines does Israel need to cross for the Security Council to finally say enough is enough and to act accordingly? Are there any red lines?
Well, to be honest, I have to say there aren't any. You know, Israel is guided by its past history and the past history of dealings with the Security Council, United Nations, United States, you name it. And this history has consistently shown that whatever Israel does, or has done rather, to date, has never been sanctioned or prevented at all. Despite the condemnation, despite all these fine words, Israel knows very well that it will not face sanction or punishment for what it does. And, you know, the other point I want to make is, why the shock and surprise? What is this play acting? To my mind, this is like a charade. There's nothing surprising about what Israel does. We know that it has, since 1967, since the June War of 1967, which was the start of Israel's occupation and then annexation of Jerusalem, Israel has behaved with total impunity. It's dug up all sorts of sensitive historical places. It has consistently tried to take over Islamic monuments, and has always got away with it.
Let me thank our guest. Yes. Ghada Karmi is a Palestinian activist and writer joining us from London. And that brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
Germany plans to send 40 mortar-armored vehicles to Ukraine as part of a new phase of Western military support for Kiev.
Regarding the mortars, we want to send a battalion which consists of roughly 40 vehicles. Those 40 vehicles should be ready in the first quarter, still to then be handed over to Ukraine. Experts are saying the training will take about 8 weeks, and the training will take place in Germany beforehand.
Well, the announcement was made following a phone call between German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and U.S. President Joe Biden. Germany says a Patriot anti-aircraft missile system from Army stocks is also to be delivered to Ukraine in the first quarter of this year. The U.S. is also sending 50 Bradley fighting vehicles to Ukraine. France, meanwhile, said it was arranging for the delivery of tanks to Ukraine. Russia says the West military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase the suffering of its people. China rebukes the United States for a sailing warship through the Taiwan Strait, calling on Washington to immediately stop undermining peace and stability in the region. The reaction was made by the Chinese embassy in Washington. It said China is ready to respond to all threats and protect its sovereignty and territorial integrity. On Thursday, the guided missile destroyer USS Chung-Hoon sailed through the Taiwan Strait. Washington says a passage is part of its commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific. Beijing sees a move in line with Washington's frequent shows of muscle flexing in the South China Sea. The two sides have been at odds over the Taiwan Strait and Taiwan itself for years now. China regards the self-ruled island as part of its territory. It's opposed to the U.S.'s growing nexus with Taiwan. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Saudi kingdom continues to oppress and harass its citizens amid international silence and the support of Western countries. Many international human rights organizations have expressed concern that a loophole in Saudi Arabia's laws allows the country's judges to continue issuing the death penalty to innocent people for minor charges. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. website Saudi Leaks has covered this story and tells us more. Human Rights Watch listed Saudi Arabia among the 10 most prominent human rights violators worldwide in 2022. The organization highlighted the mass execution of 81 men in Saudi Arabia, which ranked second in the top 10 human rights violators worldwide. The organization indicated that on March 12, 2022, the Saudi authorities executed 81 men, their largest mass execution in years, despite recent promises to limit the use of the death penalty. And with the largest execution massacre in Saudi Arabia's history and record sentences close to a century, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman tightened his grip on the country in 2022, more than ever before, granting himself tyrannical powers. Mohammed bin Salman appointed himself prime minister, shielded by interests and diplomacy from any prosecution, and with free hand in heinous human rights violations. As an inevitable result of Crown Prince's cruelty, the intensity of repression in Saudi Arabia increased in 2022 to carry out the largest mass execution, and dozens await their fate in death rows, including minors and individuals who did not face serious charges. Human rights defenders, on the other hand, activists, scholars, academics and bloggers, and dissidents are in detention centers. Women are being prosecuted. Freedom of opinion and freedom of expression is being violated, and people are being displaced from their lands and homes. With the onset of 2022 and the impact of the energy crisis, global political fluctuations and the Russia-Ukraine war, the diplomatic embargo on Saudi Arabia was broken. After a visit by the French President Emmanuel Macron at the end of 2021, Mohammed bin Salman inaugurated the season of diplomatic visits that had been prohibited since the brutal killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi embassy in Istanbul, Turkey, and a hierarchy of human rights file was lost between the energy and economic files. In March of 2022, Mohammed bin Salman received British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. US President Joe Biden was received in July, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was received in September. These visits constitute the tip of the iceberg of normalization countries have made with Saudi Arabia's violations. In parallel with breaking the isolation, Saudi Arabia carried out, in March of last year, the largest mass execution in the country's history, followed by grave violations including arbitrary sentences of up to 90 years in prison against activists, not for great crimes, but just for making tweets, really for making tweets. The Tasnim News Agency has also covered the same story. A non-governmental organization recently warned a new mass execution could happen in Saudi Arabia anytime soon, slamming massive violations of human rights in the kingdom. The Committee for Defense of Human Rights in the Arabian Peninsula said in a statement that the so-called Specialized Criminal Court in the capital Riyadh has sentenced several more Saudi nationals to death, simply for the sake of expressing their opinions on social media platforms, or participating in peaceful pro-democracy rallies, or denouncing social discrimination in Saudi Arabia. The Beirut-based human rights organization went on to highlight that the issuance of such arbitrary rulings on numerous occasions proves the hollow nature of the House of Saud's claim about respect for human rights. The Committee for the Defense of Human Rights in the Arabian Peninsula said Saudi Arabia is the kingdom of terror, and called on the international community and human rights institutions around the world to stop the looming mass executions in Saudi Arabia, which could take place under false accusations and not be based on legal criteria. It also identified some of those who have been handed down death sentences. These individuals include Yusuf al-Mansaf, Abdul Majid al-Namr, Javad Qariris, Muhammad al-Faraj, Hassan Zaki al-Faraj, and Ali Hassan al-Subaiti. Since Mohammed bin Salman became Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler in 2017, the kingdom has arrested hundreds of activists, hundreds of bloggers, intellectuals, and others for their political activism, showing almost zero tolerance for dissent, even in the face of international condemnation. Muslim scholars have been executed, and women's rights campaigners have also been put behind bars and tortured, as freedom of expression, freedom of association, and belief continue to be denied by the kingdom's legal authorities. Over the past years, Riyadh has also redefined its anti-terrorism laws to target activism and dissent. The Conversation website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Saudi Arabia recently sentenced Noura bint Saeed al-Qahtani to 45 years in prison after she had expressed her views on social media sites. This comes just a couple of weeks after a Leeds University student, Salma al-Shahab, was sentenced to 34 years in prison for using Twitter to retweet views of activists who are critical of the country. There had been a few small signs that Saudi Arabia had been offering its women a few more freedoms in the past few years, but recent harsh prison sentences against women activists have sparked increased debate about the country's human rights abuses. Despite these cases, Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler, Mohammed bin Salman, was invited to Queen Elizabeth II's funeral, although in the end, a government minister attended in his place. The fiancé of murdered journalist Jamal Khashoggi, Hatice Cengiz, criticised the invitation of Mohammed bin Salman and its implications that the United Kingdom and the international community were turning a blind eye to Saudi Arabia's excesses. One factor that means that the West is less likely to criticise Saudi Arabia right now is the war in Ukraine. However, the imprisonment of these two women is just an intensification of long-term oppression of women in Saudi Arabia by the regime, while the West looks the other way. The Trump administration avoided the issue, refraining from criticizing Saudi Arabia's human rights record. Donald Trump made Saudi Arabia part of his first foreign trip and further affirmed the U.S.'s long-standing policy of keeping a close partnership with Saudi Arabia. The Obama administration was more critical and raised some concerns over human rights in Saudi Arabia, though it still maintained a stable working relationship with the Saudis. Britain, as another key global actor, has more or less followed the same trajectory as the United States. It cooperates with Saudi Arabia on a variety of matters, politically, militarily, economically, and even selling Saudi Arabia arms that the latter then has used to indiscriminately kill people in Yemen. Saudi Arabia has had one of the poorest human rights records in the world for decades. Some would argue that the West has been letting Saudi Arabia get away with it, with human rights violations, for many years.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, the loyal audience of IRB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of your program, The House of Topics, Back to Reality. Wherever you are, at home, at work, at any corner of the world, I hope everything is going great and you're doing well. This is Asma. And once more, I'm more than happy to be with you. Today, I have the honor of having two very special guests with me in the studio. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Muhammad Hussein Rajabian. I am doing my PhD in Islamic studies, and at the same time, I'm doing my Kharij studies at Qom Seminary.
Thank you for coming. And you, brother?
I'm Ali, and I've been studying philosophy, Islamic philosophy.
Yeah, it's very good to have you here.
Thank you.
And thank you both for coming.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all ours as the host and the audience. So as time goes by, we understand the importance of the role of celebrities and major figures in society and the effect they have on other people. And I guess there is no restriction for it, you know? They are doing whatever they wish in a way that there is no restriction for it. I feel there is no border for it. They're going just the way they want to go, and there is no one to watch over them, actually. We would want to talk about the effects of these celebrities in modern day, in today's life, on the mind of people and their mentality.
The culture of celebrity and some, let's say, known people that are always on the board today is not something that has been in our culture from before. I think it is one of the
fruits of technology.
Fruits of, let's say, modernity.
Yeah.
And technology, that both modernity and technology that entered our culture. And I can refer to it as the culture of celebrity. So we see a group of people, whether they are actors or, I don't know, sportsmen or politicians. They usually are...
Even bloggers.
They are always on the board and their pictures. And it's very interesting that they have always a say in every aspect of all...
Every aspect, yes.
Affairs of the society, be it their own personal life, be it the social... issues and, I don't know, political and...
Even economical issues.
And economical issues, yeah. Alhamdulillah, you are one step ahead and us, and you know, all of these. So I wanted to say it is something that has been imported to our culture, and it was not something among us. And we are now, our society now is celebritized.
Yeah.
And we, as you said, we see that they have their comments, they have their viewpoints and stances in different areas, in... they try to create movements even in societies.
Exactly, yes.
And in our societies as well, they try to create a wave in some certain issues. The West since has been actually involved in such issues from before, let's say, because they started earlier. And it has been imported from there to, to the East. So they try to actually remedy and cure this illness from themselves. I mean, so in the West, you cannot find, even in the U.S., let's say, you cannot find a celebrity to have a political stance, I mean, very directly. That contradicts the general, let's say, criteria of policy and
political... And they have a special laws for that.
Definitely. So they do not dare, at least, to say whatever they like.
Yeah, so Brother Rajabian, what are your ideas about these celebrities and the culture that we are right now entering?
I think that nowadays people are more following their, you know, feelings than their logics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, the place, the hole that these celebrities have found. And from that, you know, they are impressing the people and influencing them.
You know what I always wonder is that how a person... having a certain mentality, having a certain sort of school of thought, would take another person's idea, which is just like him, you know, a girl just like me, a man just like us, is going to give us a certain ideology, and I'm going to take that as a gospel truth.
Mm.
How is it possible? They are just like me. They have nothing more than I think about.
This is a logical thinking. If we look at this perspective from the look at this issue from a logical perspective, it's true. That person is like me. What is his difference? He's just playing a role in a movie, for example, or he is an athlete. He has gone, you know, practice and become a famous athlete. He has made a lot of money, and he has, you know.
So, according to your personal point of view, what is the reason for them being the landmarks for people?
Because they have touched the heart of people or the feelings, I think. So I think that, for example...
So they're using their charismatic power.
Yeah, you know, he's playing in a famous football club, for example.
Yeah.
Well, and I like that club, and I like the way he plays, and I like the goals that he scored for my, you know, team. So in these ways, step by step, he inserts into my heart. So when he's in my heart, I think that now anything that he says should be followed. It is like a baby when I love my baby. So whatever he says or she says, yeah. I try to follow him. Okay, I will do that for you. So the same thing happens here. You know, that celebrity, I see that he's, for example, a great athlete or he's a handsome actor or things like that. So I see that because I love him, so his words, I should listen to his words. So in this way, I can show my feelings toward him.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that we have from this side, from our own side, and the celebrities from the other side, they know that. So they try to use it. So in the fields that they have no knows in that, they have no, you know, understanding about that, as brother said, economical issues or, you know, religious issues or political issues and things like that, that they don't know how to write it or how to, you know...
And sometimes I'm even sure they haven't read a book about that topic.
Yeah.
Yet everything they do is that they just spread their personal point of views.
So, yeah, they use the, now they have found this way. You know, these people love me. I have 10 million followers. So let's say whatever I want.
Exactly.
And this, at the same time, there are other parties that they use this. So in a normal way, who are my audience? My audience, for example, are 100 people. Mm-hmm. Now this person have 1 million, 10 yeah, million yeah. in a follower. So
now
I can
numbers
use...
have got a lot to say. Yeah. So before we go into further opinions, let's go for a short break and we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Well, this is Back to Reality with Brother Alavi and Brother Rajabian. We're talking about the importance and the effect of celebrities in different cultures and societies. And we actually touched some points, but let's go further and talk about this very fact that, yes, celebrities have got a platform right now, and they have this power that they can touch the heart of people, and they use that power against the people, actually. Well, now in this point, shouldn't we go for educating people to know more about media?
Media literacy is really important today. To me, education in the field of media literacy is not only necessary for the students in schools or, let's say, in universities, but also for common lay people as well.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting to refer to one of the recent sayings of the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Khamenei, where he said, yes, different celebrities can have their own words, and there are many believers, mu'minin among them, that they have very good activities in the society, but everyone should know whatever the celebrities are saying are valued and are important for themselves. I mean,
yeah.
The elite of the society, the scholars of the society, are those who are going to think for the leadership of any society.
Yeah.
People should know that. The people of knowledge should think for the expediency of the ummah and the societies, not celebrities who have certain, let's say, expertise in a certain branch of certain, let's say, knowledge of, let's say, art. See? So these people, they are free to have their own say, but I think even it's, again, the duty of the Islamic government to
define some, let's say, red lines for them.
And laws.
And laws that you are actually, you can actually move based on the red lines that have been defined for all the inhabitants and, let's say, all the people of this country. Mm-hmm. So you cannot exceed the limits of the limits of this country.
And I guess it's the right of the audience. That should be preserved by the government.
When there is, for example, when the person is, let's say, a sportsman, we have to benefit from the expertise that he has.
Yeah.
So I think it's not fair to ask political, economic question from this person. So it doesn't mean that a sportsman cannot be an economic scholar. No, he can, or he or she can be also a scholar in that field. But I'm not talking about the exceptions.
Exactly.
So if, in case I'm explaining this, so they are going, they might say, I mean, one might say, okay, why should you actually limit the circle of the managers and the, mm-hmm. let's say, the management of the society to a certain group of people? No. I mean, even an artist can be a politician in case he has enough knowledge and
exactly.
he has been fed.
And study.
Studying in this field, so he can be, even we had among the politicians who were a good artist,
or
and sportsman. There were some artists that were good, let's say, politicians. But we're talking in general, so celebrities, everyone who has a sort of less expertise in any area should not, I think, dare to have their own words in,
exactly.
In the areas that they have no expertise. Look, because it is quite, I mean, a rational expectation that we have it from a person. A person who is an Islamic scholar, like a marja, he is expected to answer, I don't know, different ahkam and rulings of Islam. But we see that a physician in some other part of the world comes and answers the, Islamic rulings based on his own understanding. Have you ever seen any marja to enter, I don't know, the expertise of that physician, I don't know, eye specialist, to say that this is the way that you need to do the surgery on the eye cases?
That is the problem.
Cases.
We do not
but
talk
we,
of our
we
own
We are not
specialty.
Seeing the scholars, I don't know, the men of knowledge, to enter in those fields, but plenty of cases we have that these people are entering
the reverse
in the
happens,
things that they have no expertise in.
Now we talked about education and media literacy. See, now there are different range of people of ages are using this media, and whether it be a kid or a grandfather, a grandmother who do not know anything about this media, yet they just go for scrolling things and they see things and they read things and they believe it. So how we should give people that much of maturity and understanding to go for the right thing, to see different material, yet not to get affected by every single one of them?
Well, it is very important to have this media literacy as a subject of a study in our educational system. So as we have entered the religious studies, for example, you know, physics, chemistry, other subjects into our educational system, so it is necessary that from the very beginning of the educational age of a person, he knows about this, you know, media and how he they deal with that. The same thing is about the parents. There should be special programs, courses for them, defined for them, special programs on the media that we have, the, you know, official media. And the same thing about the celebrities. I mean, they should be educated about the media. Maybe some of them don't have this media literacy, but still they are.
Exactly.
You know,
and I guess there must be some social studies, and based on that social study, the scholars and the government should go for some laws, for some special studies at a school, at universities.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And that's a need, I guess, for nowadays, because media has been concurring all aspects of life in for all the different classes of society. So this was, I know that we still have a lot to say about that. And the more we open this Pandora's box, the more of things are going to come out of it. But then time is limited, and that's all the time that we had for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رائزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رائزك لتصي دليلتك once again.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In Britain, ministers have warned they are braced for a worsening of the Border Force Union pay strikes, which so far have had little effect. Ministers have claimed Border Force Union attempts to wreck travellers' Christmas with their pay strikes have failed, but are braced for a potential escalation in the new year that could extend to seaports. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. Border Force strikes over pay and conditions could be extended to ports, including the port of Dover, within weeks, The Guardian can disclose. The Public and Commercial Services Union has recently discussed the possibility of targeting major ports of entry in the southeast of England after 8 days of industrial action concentrated on airports. Business leaders have previously warned that a strike among members at Dover could bring freight services in and out of the United Kingdom to a standstill. It comes as the government refuses to budge to boost public sector pay for 2022-2023 amid action among ambulance drivers, nurses and rail workers. The Public and Commercial Services Union insists that all options are open, after receiving a mandate for industrial action from 100,000 members in 124 government departments and other bodies. So far, 6,000 have taken action. Sources at Britain's biggest civil servants union confirmed that action in ports has been discussed internally. A spokesperson said, "We have a 6-month mandate for action, so all that needs to happen at Dover and elsewhere is we give the employer 2 weeks' notice." It comes after the union's general secretary, Mark Sawatka, warned of a huge escalation of action in January. More than 1,000 border force workers at London's Gatwick Airport, Birmingham, Cardiff, Manchester, Glasgow and Heathrow airports went on strike after the Public and Commercial Services Union announced the rejection of a 2% pay rise offer. Union members at Newhaven Port in East Sussex also withdrew their labour. About 10,000 trucks cross the channel every day with regular pickups for perishable food from big distribution centres in northern France and in Belgium. The PCS, the Public and Commercial Services Union, has more than 2,000 members in the southeast who work at ports of entry, including passport controls at Dover and at Calais. The Eurotunnel entrance in Coquelles, Manston Processing Centre and Western Jet Foil, which is where people arrive on small boats, are first landed in the United Kingdom. An extension of a strike could affect immigration, where passports are checked, customs, where lorries and freight are examined for stowaways, drugs and guns, and to check paperwork. The importation of thousands of tons of goods into the United Kingdom every day, and boats that patrol the coastline and have recently been picked up, tens of thousands of people seeking asylum. It is understood that it is highly unlikely that the union would propose strike action on boats patrolling the channel because of the risk to human lives. During the Christmas strikes, the government drafted in more than 800 military personnel and civil servants to staff entry gates and insisted that there would be no compromise on security. However, The Guardian disclosed that soldiers and sailors working at passport checkpoints had only received between 3 and 5 days of training. Leaked emails showed that the temporary staff were not authorized to stop people they suspected of criminal activity or those who were the victims of modern slavery. Amid government claims that security had not been compromised, it also emerged that only 9 people were stopped at passport control and held at Heathrow Airport over 3 strike days from 23rd to 25th of December, compared with 189 people over the same 3 days in 2021, a 95% drop. The government has claimed that on only 7 occasions out of hundreds of flights at the 6 airports over the 8 days of the strikes were passengers forced to wait more than 2 hours. Home Office sources were reported last week as saying that if the strikes were escalated to seaports such as Dover, they would have to train more staff. A Home Office spokesperson said, "We are disappointed with the union's decision to continue strike action and the inconvenience that this will cause to the public and to businesses. We have comprehensive contingency plans in place and continue to work closely with partners and industry to manage its impact, whilst ensuring we can continue to deliver vital services to the public." The British newsletter The Independent has also covered the same story. Border force strikes could be extended to Dover and other ports within weeks, under plans discussed by a union to intensify walkouts in an ongoing dispute over pay, pensions and job security. Until now, the 8 days of industrial action coordinated over Christmas by the Public and Commercial Services Union, the PCS, have largely been limited to airports, save for the port of Newhaven in Sussex. Those strikes saw more than 1,000 Home Office employees walk out of their passport control roles across 6 airports, including at Heathrow, Manchester and Gatwick, prompting ministers to call in the military in an attempt to plug the resulting gaps. But internal discussions have recently been taking place at the Public and Commercial Services Union about extending the border force strikes to Dover and to other ports in England's southeast. "We have a 6-month mandate for action, so all that needs to happen at Dover and elsewhere is we must give the employer 2 weeks' notice," a union spokesperson told The Guardian, which first reported the discussions. Around 100,000 employees across 214 government departments and other bodies voted for the industrial action coordinated by the Public and Commercial Services Union, with the Border Force strikes going ahead after a 2% pay offer was rejected, falling considerably short of the 10% pay offer demanded by desperate staff. Just days ago, the Union Secretary General Mark Sawatka warned it was inevitable that previously unaffected areas such as the Port of Dover will be hit by industrial action if the government refuses to negotiate with the unions. Mr. Sawatka threatened in the immediate wake of the ballot for action in November that strikes would aim to impose maximum pressure, telling the Independent that walkouts by public and commercial services union members at Dover would cause extraordinary disruption to traffic that goes through the port, the UK's busiest ferry port. Some 2,000 public and commercial services members are reportedly employed in ports of entry in the southeast of England, and further strikes there could impact imports, customers, travel and immigration. A Home Office spokesperson said, "We are disappointed with the union's decision to continue strike action and the inconvenience that this will cause to the public and to businesses. We have comprehensive contingency plans in place and continue to work closely with partners and industry to manage its impact, whilst ensuring we can continue to deliver vital services to the public." The government previously described having robust contingency plans which prioritise keeping our citizens safe and our borders secure at passport control booths during last month's strike, after it emerged that the soldiers drafted in to help lacked the power to detain people for questioning. While the Home Office argued that there were enough remaining Border Force staff to assist in such situations, leaked figures suggested just 9 people were stopped and held at passport control during 3 strike days at Heathrow Airport, a drop of 95% on the previous year, although more were detained at Manchester Airport than in 2021. The Port of Dover has already seen significant disruption this year, notably during the main summer peak in July, after Brexit controls made the UK a third country, forcing officials to stamp every passport. In November, the Port of Dover's boss, Doug Bannister, told MPs that tough border checks, which the UK helped develop within an EU member, will come into force for British passport holders this year, potentially causing significant and continued disruption for a very long time.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.